Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BikeRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for what is bound to be a wonderful, fun show. Today, my guest is Roberta Grimes. She is author of The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and she also is the author of a recently released book called The Fun of Staying in Touch. Roberta is a business attorney, novelist, and speaker based in Austin, Texas, who has had two extraordinary experiences of light as a child. In an attempt to understand her experience, she has spent decades studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent communications from the dead and other afterlife-related evidence that eventually enabled her to assemble an in-depth understanding of who and what we are, how reality really works, and the nature of God and meaning and purpose to our lives. As a result of this disciplined research and her study in quantum physics and consciousness evidence, she can delineate with clarity what comes next. You can find out more about Roberta and her book and blog, media, video, and all other kinds of things by visiting her website, which is robertagrimes.com, robertagrimes.com. And I do have a direct link to Roberta's website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Roberta to the show. Good day, Roberta. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here. We're going to have fun. I mean, fun is what it's all about when you think about it, right?
It is. It is. And, you know, and that's the one thing about your book that I really enjoyed. You know, first of all, you kind of really set it up by having the title The Fun of Dying. So you've kind of really got people predisposed to the idea of having fun. So that's good in itself. But also you, throughout your book, you really stress how important it is to really enjoy life. So that's a
yeah.
really wonderful thing.
It's supposed to be. Life is supposed to be happy. We're supposed to be. We have work to do here. It's pretty clear what the reason for our lives is, and it does. There is work for us to do here. But we're not meant to be dour. We're not meant to be fearful. And frankly, death has gotten a really undeservedly bad rap. Death is actually, for many people, the best time of their life.
Yeah, I saw that. When I read that line, it's like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. But now, before we really go on to talk a little bit more, I wanted to really, in your book, you stayed up front, and I want everybody to be clear, even though this is going to be a fun experience, it's not one that we want to do prematurely, correct?
No. Yeah, I've gotten a number of questions about suicide, obviously, given the fact that we've just had a suicide of someone most of us really love, and it's
right.
tragic. It's tragic that Robin Williams took his life. But the evidence about suicide tells us pretty strongly that some people get it's okay and they get through it fine. Some people who kill themselves because of It takes a longer explanation, actually, than just a couple of minutes. We plan our lives. We plan the lessons we're going to learn. It's like going to the gym, really, to come in for a lifetime. We're trying. We have all this stress and strife in our lives. All these difficult things that happen are opportunities for soul growth, and that's why we plan them in. And he, bless his heart, he planned a rough life. I mean, he planned fame and wealth and issues with wives and. Apparently, he had Parkinson's disease. He planned a lot of problems into his life to surmount. If we do that, and if we then, instead of doing what we plan to do in terms of learning, if we instead take the easy way out and kill ourselves, we may think that's okay once we've crossed, or we may blame ourselves. There's no judge after life except yourself, and you're a tough judge. So I tell people, do what I do. I send him good thoughts, pray for him, send him light, because that helps a lot in raising his spiritual vibration, and let him know nobody blames him. I mean, this was tough. This was very tough what he planned, and he did, I think, the best he could with it. But I don't know. It's tough. Don't kill yourself.
Yeah.
I think that would be the bottom line. Do not kill yourself, because you don't know whether or not you're going to forgive yourself easily. And if you don't forgive yourself, you will put yourself into the punishment level, what Jesus called the outer darkness. And it's not pleasant there.
So I just wanted to, get that up front and clear, because, it's, because we have, that was recent and is really in the forefront of many people's minds. I mean, it really, in a way, it's good for those who remain, because it brings the discussion out in the open. You know what I mean? And for those who are contemplating taking their own life, they can actually see firsthand the implications of doing so, and then hopefully, there will be a lot fewer based on what they've seen.
Yeah, it turns out, based on all the research I've done, it appears that sub-adults never blame themselves, people who are, younger than maybe mid-20s. And old people and sick people seem not to blame themselves for killing themselves. It tends to be an easy decision for them. But people who in midlife do it, it's a mixed bag. There are some people who have just really castigated themselves, because this is a great opportunity to have a lifetime here, and the growth that comes from having surmounted is just extraordinary. It's what we all want. So to just take the easy way out is very upsetting to people. Very often, a lot worse than we would tend to think. So one of the things that to me is most troubling about the fact that most people don't know what really was supposed to by now, I think, be common knowledge about our lives and about what reality is, what really is going on. One of the bad things about it is that people make decisions like this, like killing themselves, choosing to hold grudges or blame people, or just decisions that are very short-sighted in terms of the fact that we are eternal beings. We never begin, we never will end. Our minds are eternal. So if you hold a short-term grudge that's going to lower your vibratory rate, that's really hurting yourself. It doesn't hurt anybody but yourself. But people don't know that, because all this information has still been hidden from them. It's shocking to me.
Yeah, and that's, that was the one thing that I really liked about your book is, the whole, it appears to me that the whole purpose of the book is really to shed light on a lot of those myths and, preconceived ideas that we've been, spoon-fed for probably since birth, and to try and shift the consciousness so that when the time comes, that there won't be the fear factor that seems to be the permeate things.
Yes. Fear of death is the base fear. When you no longer fear death, you no longer fear anything. And fear is the opposite of love. So it's amazing how it transforms your life. And I've seen it not just in my life, but in the lives of so many people who have done this research and come all to the same conclusions. People are surprised to know that there's so much evidence about what actually is going on. It's amazing to me how few people are aware of it. But there was an effort on the part of dead people, dead researchers, dead scientists, dead experts. There was a big effort about 100 years ago, latter part of the 19th, early part of the 20th century, an effort to show us that they were alive and to begin the process of raising the consciousness of the planet. They tried to do it 100 years ago. And all those communications are still available in dusty old books. Some have been reprinted. Anybody can read them. It just, you've got to ferret them out. It's taken me decades to do that, and others, as I say, have done that research as well. But this all was stonewalled by science. Science would look at none of it, even though there was a real effort on the part of the dead to give evidence that could be scientifically validated. They ignored it. And, of course, religions, Christianity in particular, don't want to know this stuff because, frankly, the truth is different from what the Christian dogma teaches people. They don't want people to think something else might be true. So it's a mess. It's really a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and that's the one thing. You know, I enjoyed the fact that you know, in your book you don't saddle the reader with a lot of specifics in the sense of, you know, the details and notes and that kind of thing. I mean, you really kind of take an overall layman's approach to the information, so it's easily understood by anyone, you know, and I think that's, you know, put very simply, so that, you know, people aren't going to be spending time in their head, you know, trying to figure it out exactly what you're saying. Instead, it's going to be, okay, this is exactly how I feel about what I'm reading.
There is a great deal of really solid scholarship in this field, and the problem is it's hard to go through all of it. So I think of The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch as entries for people who don't have any knowledge in this field. Everything that's in those books is true and based entirely in either, you know, good scholarship or original research. It's all true. If I guess, I tell people it's a guess, but I don't really have to guess at much because it's all out there. So I give a summary, which is easy to understand, easy to read in layman's language, but then in both books, I give a very substantial annotated reading list. If you want to know more about any of these areas, you know, the information's all there for you. I'll tell you what the best books are and, you know, get you started. And I'll also answer questions. People email me questions all the time, and I answer them. But most people aren't aware, just have no idea of how much of this information is just at their fingertips and how freeing it is when you come to understand that it's all good news. There isn't any bad news. It's just, it's the best news in all of human history, and we're basically wasted the whole 20th century by not looking at it sooner.
Yep, and everyone is guaranteed to experience it in one way
or
another.
Yeah, right. The death rate's 100%. I think we can say that safely. So, we may as well, sooner or later, everyone either loses someone they love or they, you know, have a terminal illness or just plain start to get older. And we start to wonder a little more deeply about what happens at death, especially since there's all the confusion in the marketplace that there is. If you've been raised as a Christian, as I was, very strictly, and of course after having had two experiences of light, believe me, I was really a Christian after that. It took me until I was in my 50s to accept the fact, and it's a fact, that Christian dogmas are not right. The things that we're taught by the religion are just plain. There's no evidence whatsoever that God has ever judged anybody. We judge ourselves.
Yeah.
That's universally true. And there's no evidence whatsoever that Jesus had to redeem anybody for his sins. God doesn't judge us in the first place. So that troubled me for a long time. But then I went and read the Gospels, and I found Jesus told us all the same stuff that we're now learning from the afterlife evidence.
Yeah.
Little detail, even.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, religious dogma in whatever religion seems
that's
to,
right.
you know, that causes to separate us from God or source or however you want
that's
to
right.
term it.
Yeah,
and
you're
and
right.
Any of it, yeah, any of it, it just is really kind of serves to try and control, you know, those who believe that, and you know, and each one has, I'm sure, its little common golden thread of truth through it, but it's just a thread, you know, that I think if people were to examine it, they would recognize that common element.
Yeah, I think that what's most troubling to me is that people miss the opportunity for so much spiritual growth if they buy the notion that Jesus redeemed them from, you know, basically you can do whatever you want for your whole life and then just accept Jesus as your Savior on your deathbed and you have a get out of hell free card.
Really?
Jesus never said that. And it isn't true. Folks, it's just not true. If you do things in your lifetime that are not loving and kind, if you don't love, if you don't forgive, there isn't any way to fix that. You've wasted a life. We're here to learn how to love and forgive, which is what Jesus said. And
yeah.
there isn't a shortcut. Jesus in the gospel says this stuff. 95%+ of the red letters in the gospels I can document independently are true. I can show you in the afterlife evidence how he knew what he was talking about. How's that for amazing?
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. To me, it's like very much like the film Robin Williams was in, you know, What Dreams May Come, you know, as far as, you know, the afterlife, whether you create your own heaven or your own hell, you know, and it's just, to me, it's just ironic when you think of that. But I have to address, you are a practicing attorney. You know, so I've had a few of you folks who have really kind of shocked me in the sense of, you know, I mean, you obviously you present a case very well. You know, that is something.
Well, thank you. It's interesting. There are a lot of people doing research now in the area of the afterlife who are either scientists. Or I spoke with a woman today who is she for a living is a scientist who deals with criminal law. I mean, my goodness. But she's one of the leading afterlife researchers. Victor Zammit of Australia, who with his wife put out a newsletter that everybody should just victorzammit.com, get his newsletter. It's fantastic. Comes out every week. It's free. He's an attorney. He didn't even start doing this research until he retired, and he's a bear. My goodness, he just there's nobody who can get in his face and that he can't talk down. I think it's like a new day in a sense. We've been doing this research for a long time, but more and more people who have serious careers are coming out. I mean, when I had to come out to my clients, The Fun of Dying was being published. They didn't even know I did this kind of research, and it was funny because there I am in my suit. They're there in their suits. I'm saying, you may see this book that I've just written, and some of them loved the idea. Oh, this is great, and they read that book, and they read other books of mine. Some of them said, well, and back to what we were talking about, they just didn't want to know. They didn't fire me, but they certainly didn't want to know I had any other interests.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really, I find it, you know, very interesting in these times where, like you say, you have scientists or people who have training in, you know, very techniques of observation and, you know, and study that, you know, they're kind of embracing, you know, the idea of afterlife or spirituality or connected, you know, and I think, you know, maybe a little bit is in that quantum field, that little, you know, quantum area of you know, craziness. You know, to me, it's interesting that the two are melding or coming together, you know, where, you know, in the past, there has been such a distinct separation between the two, and it seemed that both areas of science and religion really wanted to keep it that way. You know,
they
that
did.
That was the way. Yeah,
right.
And
you're right. They put up their wall and they said, "All right, that's your side. This is my side." But neither of them wanted to own the afterlife evidence, which was, as I say, coming over in a flood the early part of the 20th century. Curiously, right at the same time that quantum physics was being, codified, and Max Planck got the Nobel Prize in 1918 for being basically the father of quantum physics. Quantum physics and the afterlife evidence are naturally a natural match. And they are that because the physics of the afterlife is consciousness-based. Entirely consciousness-based. We travel by mind. I'm here. I think I'd like to be in Istanbul. Oh, there I am. That's how we travel in the afterlife. Mind, matter is created by mind in the afterlife levels. If you're like me or you, maybe we can't do it quite ourselves, but if we want to build a house, we design the house and we call in upper-level beings, and they think it into a permanent existence. That's what happens. With the people who were doing this research, and, believe me, I was in the group, finding that this was the case, how could that be possible? It was so hard to understand until in the early part of the 21st century there started to be some very good quantum physics for dummies books. And you read them, and okay, it all makes sense. Quantum physics is a kind of plug that connects this level of reality, the material level, with all the rest of reality, which is most of reality. Most of reality is basically where the dead are, and there's probably a lot more, too, we're not even aware of. But here's an interesting point. The scientists have known for a number of years, based on the way photons interact with matter and based on the way gravity interacts, they've discovered that less than 5% of matter in this universe, matter and energy, as they're interchangeable, less than 5% of it is anything that we can study. The rest of it's dark matter and dark energy. I mean, think about that for a minute. What scientists are studying is less than 5% of what we already know exists. So what's all the rest of it? Well, 27% of it's dark matter. Now, that makes if we've got six levels of reality and five of them are dark, they don't interact with material light, and one of them is this material universe, that's about right, isn't it? That's probably the afterlife levels that these folks are just walking by because they can't figure it out. And there it is. And the 67% or something that's dark energy, I'll bet that's God. I mean, think about it. It makes sense. It all makes sense. They would not interact with material photons because it's all spiritual energy and spiritual matter. But science.
Yeah, I've often wondered about that dark matter because the idea of not only different levels of reality, but also when you add in the idea of multiverse, multiple
yes.
universes kind of thing.
Well, what's funny is that's what they have come up with because they know that there are multiple universes, but they can't. It's a belief. Science is a belief system now, and the belief system is atheism. And therefore, there can't be any kind of predetermined plan around this material universe or the non-material levels of reality. And the only way they can come up with an explanation is there must be infinite universes, and by random chance, this is the one in which all the constants are right for the universe to be stable and for life to arise. Now, what kind of sense does that make?
Well, I mean, there is that chance.
there is that little chance. I mean it's cockeyed and crazy, but this is where,
yeah.
when you start turning science into a belief system, which they've done, when you do mm-hmm. that and you set it up against another belief system, which is religion of any kind, you put yourself in a position where you're painting yourself into a corner of absurdity, total absurdity.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
That's the one thing that, is really difficult. I mean, because the idea of using scientific the scientific approach or techniques to measure, you know, quantify, codify, you know, something that is beyond vision or sight or any other type of measurement, it becomes impossible. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're using different measurement systems for different types of entities or product or whatever, you know, material. So, I mean, the techniques that are available in use can't, just by the nature of what we don't see and don't know, really, you know, that it's just really impossible to use the technique to prove with certainty exactly what exists and what doesn't.
What's interesting now is that, you know, people who have been in this field for a number of years all have the same sense that we are coming to a point in probably the first half of this century, could be within the next 10 to 15 years, when this will all be common knowledge. It's going to happen all at once. We're seeing a tremendous elevation already in people's awareness of what's actually going on. It astonishes me. I would be 4 or 5 years ago, I would be speaking to a group and I'd see uncomprehending faces. It would be all brand new to them. Now, when I speak, I see nodding, I see smiles, I get really, really sharp questions. It's just amazing how fast it's happening. And other people say the same thing who do work in this field. It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
It is great because, you know, I think you reach a level, kind of like a tipping point, you know, where, you know, so many people have who are aware of and conscious of, you know, experiences. People, they know someone who has kind of had an experience. Having a personal experience,
yeah,
that is, you know, paranormal in the sense that it's beyond what, you know, normal type of physical experiences are, seems to really shift people's belief system. You know, scientists who experience a paranormal event can no longer deny, you know, if they're being honest with themselves, you know, that there is an existence of something beyond which they, you know, was not in their worldview.
That's right. Near-death experiences helped a lot because a lot of people now are aware of them, and many people have had them. But other things happen too. For example, by a number of studies, as many as 50% of spouses see an actual vision of the departed spouse within the first year after a death. Almost 50%. And that's life-changing. I mean, you see him or her standing there looking healthy and happy and then fading away, and you know they're fine. It's no longer a question. So when I talk with people, people will look, you know, they'll be a little guarded in the beginning, but when they find out I'm not going to say that's crazy, people will tell me stories, amazing stories. Some of them made it into The Fun of Staying in Touch. Stories they really wouldn't tell people because they don't want to be, they know it happened, they know it's real, but they don't want to have it disparaged by people who are just lack the understanding of what's going on to be able to you know, see what happened to them. It's amazing that it's happening.
I find that to be true. And now, one of the things that you talk about in your book is that the near-death visions, you know, deathbed types of visions that historically, prior to the time when people were in hospitals and medicated and sedated and all that kind of thing, that those kinds of visions were more commonplace, and that because of, you know, in today's environment and that kind of thing, that sometimes that sedation and medication hampers visions?
Yes, yeah. Heavily medicated people typically don't seem to have the visions in the same way until they're out of their body. What seems to be a universal part of dying is that as we're approaching death, one or more of our loved ones will appear to us. Usually they appear in the upper corners of the room, but often they come down and walk around in the room. And they've come for us. You know, your mother died in old age. She now looks young and happy. The dog that you loved in your childhood. Sometimes it's a group of people. Sometimes it's only one or two. But they come for us, and when we get out of our bodies, then what they do is take us to the next level, the next energy level of reality, which is all of the levels are exactly where we are here. And I can explain in a minute how death happens, knowing that they're all in this spot. But what seems to have happened in the early part of the 20th century, 1926, Sir William Barrett wrote Deathbed Visions about, and coined the term, about the kinds of visions people had who were dying. And a lot of people dying back then before antibiotics were young people. People would die of diphtheria or some other now easily treatable illness. And they would have these beautiful visions going on sometimes for days of where they were going. It would be as if the walls of the room disappeared, and they would have detailed visions of what really is right here, only it's on a different vibratory rate. Sadly, you don't get those stories much anymore, but people still routinely will report deathbed visions. The last words of Steve Jobs, when he was hugging his family, and then his eyes lifted, and he looked beyond them, and he exclaimed three times, "Oh, wow!" And those were his last words. We know that he was seeing the people who were coming for him.
Yeah.
And it's good to know. It's good to have these little glimpses for those of us who are staying behind. Sometimes people who are at the bedside will see the visitors who come to take away the person who's dying. Sometimes not. But Raymond Moody,
yeah,
who coined the term deathbed visions in 2010, wrote Glimpses of Eternity about shared deathbed visions, people who were at the bedside and got to see that those people coming for the person who had died.
Yep. Well, gosh, you know, we're half, a little past halfway through the show, so I'm going to take a quick break, and if there's anyone listening that would like to ask Roberta a question, feel free to call in. The number is 619-789-4359. Also, if you happen to be listening live in the chat room and would like for me to pose a question to Roberta, feel free to call in, to type that one in, and I'll be sure to pass that on to Roberta. And then, Roberta, when we come back, I would like to, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, that experience at that time, and then also one of the things that I found was fascinating too in your book is you talked about maybe emergency surgery is required after
that. Yeah.
But I thought, wow, that was something new I hadn't heard before.
To talk about
so,
that. Yeah.
Okay. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, I'm Marion Brownlee, author of Facing Demons at marionbrownlee.com. I would like to just give you a short review on Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It's a great little book and especially valuable for those who are starting on their spiritual path, seeking to make change in their lives and possibly fearing to go there, wondering if you're going in the right direction or if you should be changing directions. It explains how a little bit of faith goes a long way, and sometimes you just need to follow your own gut instincts and you will end up where you're supposed to be going. So enjoy the read and spend the time to just have a little think about what's in the book, and it will help you along your path. Many blessings.
Hey Robert, it's Chris from Curious Times. Just want to let you know I read your book, Joy Potential. Thought it was an awesome story and the twists and the turns were great. I felt like the characters were just really easy to relate to. I most appreciated how the book delivers some sage advice without making you feel like you're being lectured to, and without feeling like I was reading another one of those thousands of self-help books written by some spiritual guru. Very entertaining learning, and the book left me wanting to know what happens next. Thanks so much, and good luck with this book, Robert.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777. Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. And again, I do want to thank Marion Brownlee from Australia for that testimonial, as well as my good friend and fellow radio host Chris from Canada for hers as well. Also, do want to let everybody know that as of yesterday, I have self-published my second book called It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, It is all about the various insights and awarenesses I have gained through my many guests over the years, as well as actions people can take to make their life better. That book is now working its way through the distribution process and will soon be available on Amazon, iBooks, and also on Barnes & Noble Nook. So you can always go to my website, www.biteradio.me, click on the books, the new books link, and you'll see Joy Potential, Spirituality Bites, and then soon to be upcoming co-creation with my good friend from Phoenix, Melinda Vale. It'll be an inspirational journal that will be coming out in October, so lots of really good things happening. Okay, let's get back to today's show. Again, my very special guest today is Roberta Grimes, and she is author of The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and also newly released, and that is called The Fun of Staying in Touch. Again, you can find out more about Roberta's books, her reviews, blog, appearances, videos, all of that kind of thing by visiting her website, which is robertagrimes.com. Again, there is a link to her website in the show page description. And also on her website, you can join her on Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google+. I'm on all of those. I've just connected with Roberta on those. So if you are on that social media, then you'd be sure to join her as well. Okay, Roberta, we're back.
It's good to be back. Can I just say quickly how death happens? Because I think it's easier for people to envision it if they have that sense. I mean, I used to wonder as a child, where the heck is it? Is it up on a cloud? I mean, where is this afterlife? And it makes it harder to believe that it exists if you can't see it. Well, if you think of your mind, which is eternal, your mind is eternal, it's part of the source consciousness. It's part of God. It's like a television set. Right now it's tuned to the Earth channel. In fact, it's tuned to that particular body on the Earth channel. And that's why you're picking up what the sensory organs of that body are detecting. You think you're in that body, you're not. If you think of Jake's blue body in the movie Avatar, you get a better sense. That avatar is, you know, his way of sort of probing the world while he stays safe, and we are safe in God even now, but we think we're in these bodies. But anyway, so here we are in this, tuned to this body. When we die, there are other, just as when you have your TV on, there are a lot of other channels in the room, there are other levels of reality exactly in the same place. They're just at higher energy levels. So you're tuned to channel one now. When you die, your mind just tunes to channel three or channel four, and it picks up a whole new solid reality in the same place. That's how death happens. It's very, very easy. It doesn't hurt. It's actually, people who have died tell us that it's physically pleasurable to be out of the body. Of course, it would be. The body was dying and decrepit, and now you're young and healthy and happy. Naturally, you feel good.
However you want.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Well, now, one of the things I noticed is in your book, you talked about seven different afterlife realities or something to that effect.
Levels,
and you know,
yeah.
And when you described it now, like the channels, you know, as far as being a different vibration, what determines what channel you're tuned into next?
Well, quite simply, our rate of spiritual vibration determines the level that we can attain. We can always go lower. We can't go higher than what basically our ability to, this is so corny, I'm sorry to even have to put it this way. It's how well you learn how to love. That's what it is. The Beatles, you know, love is all you need. Jesus, one command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. All these sages who have said love is what we're here to learn, they were all right. The better you're able to love, and I mean love universally, love everybody, love your enemies, love everyone. The better you're able to do that, the higher your vibratory rate. And you can get to a vibratory rate such that you won't incarnate anymore. You're able to be basically free of the need to come back here and keep learning stuff, which is a good thing to shoot for.
Yeah, I want to be there now.
Yeah, right.
Let me just love everybody right now. I love.
It's that simple. It's really not hard. There do seem to be other things that some people are here learning, but for nearly all of us, learning to love and learning to forgive, those are the lessons. And everything that happens in our lives is, as of course, A Miracle says, is either love or a call for love. So whatever the question, love is the answer. That's all we're here to do.
Okay. Great. Okay. Well, you know, we have a caller here who has a question, so let me go ahead and bring her on and see what we have here. Kathy, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Thanks for
How
joining
are you?
Us.
Yeah. I have so many questions. It's unbelievable.
Well, go ahead and pick one there. What's the of most interest to you right at the moment there, Kathy?
Are there, like, different schools on the other side that they learn? Go
oh,
to
yeah.
school?
Yes. The learning is what we most – there's so many things we enjoy doing, Kathy. You'd be amazed. Anything you think is fun here, you can do it there. But people love to learn from upper-level beings. How more easily they can learn to love and forgive and just learn. We don't even know what some of the wonderful stuff is that they choose to learn. I don't think there are exams either. You get to just learn and have it be fun. Mm-hmm. But yes, we certainly do a lot of learning there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're told it's hard to learn to love there. It's hard to learn to forgive because life there is so easy and joyful. Mm-hmm. Here, it's like going to the gym. You know, here we're in a spiritual gym. We can strengthen our muscles, learn to love and learn to forgive in adverse conditions.
Do they get mad at us if we don't go to the cemetery?
They don't want you going to the cemetery. They say this over and over again. They're not in the cemetery.
Yeah,
what
right.
People at higher vibratory rates, and that includes all of our dead, can easily come down to our lower level. We can't see them, but they're often with us.
Mm-hmm.
They can lower their vibratory rate just that easily, and they don't want us grieving. They want us to have a happy life. They want us to enjoy our lives, and then, you know, send them a happy thought every so often. You know, send love. That's what I do. I just say, you know, I'm thinking of you, mom or dad or whoever I'm thinking of, and, you know, I love you. I'll see you soon. That's all they want.
They don't want you in the cemetery.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I know. My sister goes and plants flowers and, gets the weeding out.
Yeah. Well, if it helps her spiritually, that's okay, but it doesn't do anything at all for the people that she's whose graves it is.
Because my... mother-in-law made her son feel very guilty. You know, if you don't come and see me, I'm going to haunt you at the cemetery.
Oh, Lord.
Maternal guilt.
She probably feels very different now.
I'm sure. You know, I think we've only gone one.
Well, the thing is, because most people don't know what's really going on, they tend to think things like, I'm going to be in the ground, I'm going to be lonesome, you better come and, you know, decorate my grave, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're there, I mean, they have beautiful young bodies, and there's infinite stuff to do. Every fun thing in the world you can do, and you don't have to work, and as my depression-bruised mother-in-law said, you can go to the store anytime, and you don't need money. Which I thought was just exactly what
there
was made
go.
Her most entranced about it there.
Right.
Good. Well, Kathy, thank you for your questions. Those are really great. I appreciate
okay.
that.
Okay.
Kathy, if you have more questions, just contact me through robertagrimes.com. I love hearing from people and answering questions.
Okay, thanks. I will.
Perfect. Great. Thank you. Okay. Now, and you also address people, Roberta, on your social media through Facebook and Twitter and all that?
Yes, but the problem is you're talking to somebody who is absolutely technologically illiterate.
Oh, okay.
An open secret of mine is I have this wonderful girl who does all my social media. She does my tweeting and whatever I do because I don't know how to do it. So,
okay.
If anybody has a question and you really want to make sure it gets to me, I answer all my emails at robertagrimes.com. But other than that, I can't be sure.
That's great. Okay. Well, I'll keep my eye open for when those social media comments come through, and I'll thank your wonderful assistant, social media friend there. Great.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I'd like to kind of move on to is that, you know, you in your book, you kind of spent some time talking about the, like, immediately following death, you know, afterlife.
Uh-huh.
You talk about afterlife. A couple of the things that you mentioned is that when that transition happens, that sometimes the spirit will be foggy, or, you know, depending on the quality of the mind prior to the transition.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, basically, your mind is always perfect, but your mind is also powerful and creative. And if your mind, if you put, let's say you've had an injury in a war, or you lost a limb or something, you could think that that limb is still missing. Let's say that you had Alzheimer's, you could think that there's still something wrong with your mind, even though that was purely a brain disease. Your brain does not generate your mind. What they do is try to help people feel better by doing emergency surgery. They say they tell people, okay, you have a problem, but fortunately we can fix it. And you're taken to what looks like an ordinary operating room of your own culture, and they say, you know, we're going to give you an anesthetic. You won't need to be asleep. You can watch us fix this. We're going to sew an arm back on you, and you'll be fine. And they do this. They help you to re-envision yourself as healthy and whole, and it works apparently amazingly well. When there are a lot of people who die in war, there's often a lot of demand for those operating rooms. And just think how loving that is, though. I mean, but usually, almost immediately, people realize that they're whole and healthy and young and beautiful and all the things you'd most want to be, and then they're fine.
Yeah.
But not always.
I found that interesting, because it seems to be a way to help the spirit kind of frames their recovery in a way that they can most accept and appreciate and kind of relate to.
Yes. Think of R&R. You know, you're in a very difficult war, and you need rest and relaxation from this difficult thing you've been through. Well, that's the way we're treated when we first arrive in the afterlife levels. We've been through a very, very difficult experience. This having been in this life, this is treated as really a bad, horrible thing to have gone through, and we're heroes just for having done it. So they do whatever they can to give us a joyous, happy introduction to the afterlife levels. And there's no time there. Objective time does not exist. So you can stay as long as you want. There's no conveyor belt that's going to make you go somewhere else, which is one reason why when I wrote The Fun of Dying, I really only talked about the early period. And The Fun of Growing Forever will be out in 2017, and that will talk about some of the later things that can happen. But they happen at our – there's no hurry. You have an infinity to do whatever growing you're going to do. That's part of the joy of it. Think of how we're so pressed on this planet to do everything by a certain time. Wouldn't it be great to have no time and not have to worry about it ever again?
Oh, yeah.
That's the afterlife.
Exactly. Absolutely. Now, you know, one of the things that I also found interesting, and that I could kind of I had a couple examples with, was that, you know, you mentioned that people, like, in their deathbeds have glimpses of this paradise. You talked about, you know,
yes,
kind of like a it's here but a different vibration kind of thing. And you mentioned fields in your book. You mentioned fields of flowers, mountains, lakes, and
it is
so interesting, because as soon as I saw that, I mean, two things really popped into my head quickly. One of them was that I had a woman on my show last month. Her name is Hilary Jamon, and she wrote a book called Surrealistic Trials, and she had that, you know, death experience. And then hers, she was on a lake. I mean, it was just her on this lake, and there were, you know, islands in the distance, and that was it. I mean, for this period that she was in a coma for months, but for the whole period that she was gone, she was just on the lake, you know.
Yes.
And I found that was interesting. And then, gosh, probably several months ago now, I was with someone and the car got a flat tire. Well, the tow truck driver who came in to pick us up also had a near-death experience. His was at a lake fishing, you know, and it was, you know, and when he discussed it, I mean, he was like the last person I would have ever expected to be talking about a, you know, a death experience. And then he just basically indicated that, you know, he had hundreds of thousands of dollars in bills, but it didn't matter to him. I mean, he just knew that, you know, beyond this life, there was just a peaceful place to go.
Yes, it's really beyond anything we can imagine in terms of how wonderful it is. And we have our senses are much stronger there. Our ears are much stronger because, of course, we don't have physical ears. It's mind hearing, and mind sight is so much stronger than anything your eyes can do. There was a fellow who communicated 100 plus years ago who had been almost blind when he died. He told his family, just to tell you how well I can see now, about 50 miles from where I am, looks like about 50 miles, there's this beautiful mountain range topped with snow, and there are foothills, you know, or at the start of the mountain range. And I can see every leaf on every tree on every one of those foothills. That's how good mind sight is. Whoa. But that's it, and it's also panoramic. We can see 360 degrees. Because, again, it's not limited by physical eyes. It's just so in doing this research, I kept coming across new wonderful things and say, oh, my goodness, we get that too? And then there's this other thing also? It's like more wonderful. It's the best Christmas morning you ever imagined. It's just fabulous.
Yeah. Now, do you believe after with that research that that particular experience, what one experiences is what is probably the most peaceful, the most, I mean, it's kind of like they're put into a setting that makes it easiest to accept where they are.
Yes, I think that that's the reason for it. And it's very culturally related. If you die in a different part of the world, what I describe in The Fun of Dying is the North American and also the British afterlife. And they're very similar, although the North American one, it seems to be the one with the mountains. But if you die in China, you're going to end up in a beautiful place with pagodas. And you're going to say, what? And immediately your family will come for you, and they'll take you to, you know, a place that looks more familiar. But yes, and our families build us, and this is, again, one of the many things Jesus told us. Our families build us what looks like our earth home, and we can live there as long as we like. We don't need to live anywhere because we don't have weather issues, and it never gets dark, and we don't need to sleep, and we don't need to eat. We can just play. But until we feel that we're okay not having a house, we can have a house. And you do get to take it with you. Anything you miss from the earth level, you just think of it, and you turn around, and there it is. Whatever it is, I'm amazed to be able to say that to you. You miss your car, you can have a car. Whatever you want. The reason for it seems to be so we get past the thought of lack, material lack. We need to get into a feeling of wholeness. Because people quickly seem to get tired of things once they're there, because you don't need things. But until we get tired of things, we get to have things. Gold, silver, doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, so not only can you take it with you, but if you didn't have it to begin with, you can
have it.
You.
Yes, exactly right. You can. Okay. It's just amazing and wonderful. I mean, the most loving possible afterlife awaits all of us, and it you just have to have lived a reasonable life, learn to love as best you can, learn to forgive as best you can. You don't have to be a hero to get to these beautiful Summerland levels. You just have to have lived a pretty okay life, and it's all there for you. It's just amazing and beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've obviously researched hundreds of years of evidence and that kind of thing. What has probably struck you the most as far as maybe shaking your belief system or shifting your belief system, you know, from, you know, what you had thought about the afterlife or, you know, experience?
The greatest moment of my life was when I, having got spent 10 years not reading the Bible because I was so distressed that Christianity obviously was not right, when I went back again and read the Gospels and realized Jesus told us all this stuff, all of it, 2,000 years ago, and I realized I could keep Jesus. I didn't have to, you know, Jesus was right. Jesus was right. That was the greatest discovery of my life. That was when I was able to put Christianity aside as, you know, we put away childish things and espouse my way shower and best friend. I'm much closer to Jesus than I ever was when I was a professed Christian. But he told us all this stuff. That water you were talking about, Jesus talks in the Gospels about living water. Well, people say, oh, he's talking about baptism. The water in the afterlife levels, one of the things they tell us is remarkable about it, is it's alive. It's alive and it's life-giving. Jesus said if you knew who you were talking to, you'd ask and he would give you living water. He was talking about the water in the afterlife levels. Isn't that amazing?
No, that's really something. Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure that was eye-opening, you know, as far as...
Oh, my goodness!
Yeah. Well,
I mean, the thrill of it is with me still.
Yeah. Now, we've got only 4 minutes left, so I just wanted to maybe throw out one particular topic, and there was one of your chapters toward the end of the book, and it's what can go wrong? Is there anything that can go wrong during this transition process?
The biggest risk you have, there are two risks. One is of becoming earthbound. When you see your deathbed visitors, go with them. Don't try to comfort the living because they can't see you and you risk losing track of the people who came for you. So that's the first thing that can go wrong, but it's easy. Just remember, if you remember nothing else, just remember, go with the people who are not now in bodies. They're going to take you to a place where you'll be happy. But the other thing that can go wrong is you can not learn to forgive in this lifetime. If you don't learn to forgive while you're here, believe me, you'll have a lot of trouble forgiving yourself. And if you don't forgive yourself in the afterlife, you end up on the outer darkness level, which, as Jesus said, there is wailing and gnashing of teeth. You don't want to be there. But it's easy to avoid. Just forgive. You're going to forgive everybody after you die anyway. I mean, I could tell you that from having read about hundreds of life reviews people have been through. They always forgive. So if you're going to do it then, you may as well do it now and help to flex your forgiveness muscle.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, if this is all, you know, transitory anyway, what difference does it make? You know, it's like, you know,
that's
easier
right.
just to
that's
forgive
exactly
and,
right.
and move on, you know.
That's right.
Live a better afterlife. So,
that's right. Yeah, this is all our preparations for a wonderful future.
Oh, this is great. Well, do you have any final words? You know, what do you hope that, you know, the reader will leave with after reading The Fun of Dying?
I'm trying to help people lose their fear and understand that God is infinite, infinite love. God loves you best out of all the world. You are his best beloved child, and it's impossible, impossible for God ever to blame you for anything. Just love.
Well,
that's all we have to do is just love, and don't be afraid.
Okay. Well, you know, Roberta, this, like we said before the show, this was really going to be a fun show, and I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed chatting with you, and
me
and
too.
I really
this is
thank
fun.
You for your time. Good. And,
well,
thank you so much for having me,
and thanks to your listeners.
You're welcome. And like I said, I really enjoyed your book. It was just so easy to read and digest the information, and I think that's one of the beauties of the book.
Thank you. Bless you.
You're
bless
welcome.
You. And anyone who has questions, don't hesitate. RobertaGrimes.com. I answer my emails.
That's right. Do it by email or have her assistant. We'll answer you by social media.
That's right. I don't know what she'll tell you, but anyway.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Roberta. And I appreciate
you
it.
So
I'll be
much.
Sure, I'll be sure to add your book to my recommended reading list on my website, too. So.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, you as well. Again, everyone, I do want to remind you today, my very special guest has been Roberta Grimes, author of The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and also author of The Fun of Staying in Touch. And you can find out more about her books, again, by visiting her website, which is www.robertagrimes.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.